The devastating flood of June 1972 had an unforgettable impact on Rapid City and the surrounding area, both physically and emotionally. Now, as we approach the 50th anniversary of the event, we'd like to take the opportunity to look back and reflect. In this series of podcasts, we will examine archival materials, revisit witness accounts, and hear firsthand from some of the survivors themselves. This is The Flood of 72, 50 years later. Carol Engel had grown up in Rapid City and had just graduated from high school in 1972. A night out with friends took a harrowing turn when the sudden floodwaters caught their vehicle and swept them away.
My name is Carol Engel. I was born and raised in Rapid City, South Dakota, and I'm still living here. I grew up in the South Canyon area of Rapid City. Lime Creek was behind our backyard. I remember it flooding a couple of times. One time even coming all the way up past the retaining wall and up to our patio. We never had to leave for higher ground. One night, three tornadoes went right over our house. That was the time the Coca-Cola plant on 8th Street, or now known as Mount Rushmore Road, and most of Keystone were hit hard and almost destroyed. It had been pretty dry that spring of 1972. They had been seeding the clouds hoping for rain. I remember thinking it was raining a lot that June 9th. I had left my one-year-old daughter with my parents in South Canyon. Some friends and I decided to go to Miner's Camp, a bar off of East St. Patrick Street. All night long, lights kept flickering on and off. The lights finally went off. I remember the drummer kept playing and playing. The owners finally told us everyone had to leave. We got in an old Nash Rambler station wagon. As we came up St. Joseph Street in front of the School of Mines, we couldn't help notice there was no street lights and it was raining fast and hard. When the wall of water hit us, it hit us so hard that we pushed backwards. Thank God, a semi-truck tire high-centered us right by the railroad tracks in front of the MDU building by the fairgrounds. Some people came over and threw ropes and pulled us over. We spent the night and part of the morning in the top of the building. I will never forget the smell of fire, smoke, and burnt wiring. The sights of live wires sparking as they hit the water and starting small fires everywhere. Water was rushing so fast and hard, I had never seen anything like that before. The sounds were the worst. The water pushing everything with such a force, it was loud as four freight trains. There were people screaming, "I can't swim, throw me a rope, help me, help me." Then nothing. One of the girls I was with tried to cross East St. Patrick Street. A dead body had hit her with such a force she fell over. She did make it across. I had never experienced anything like this before. We heard Canyon Lake Dam had broke. It was around dawn that they let us leave the building. The ground was smoldering, little fires everywhere, the smell of wood and electrical wires burning. As we drove up towards the post office and turned right onto East Boulevard, the brand new Lincoln Continentals at Frontier Ford were stacked leaning on each other like dominoes, no damage to them, just end on end. The train cars were scattered in every direction. There were trees, cars, trucks, houses, furniture, garbage, water, and mud everywhere. It looked like a war zone, something you would see on the news from Vietnam. All I could think about was my daughter and my folks in South Canyon. No cell phones, no phone service, pay phones ripped away. Some roads were impassable. I finally got a hold of my parents. Somehow, Lime Creek never flooded. Thank God they were all okay. Driving around afterwards was very sad and an eye-opener. All the destruction. The houses on Omaha Street, where Founders Park is now, were washed on top of each other or into each other. There were vehicles and trees, dead bodies in trees, debris and mud so thick. I had never seen anything like this before. My favorite childhood spot, Storybook Island, was destroyed. The days after the flood, the city was looking for trucks to haul mud and debris. My dad and his roofing crew used his company trucks to help with the cleanup. A lot of companies helped out. The National Guard were brought in to help out. We heard looting was a problem. I don't remember reports of other states or companies donating help like they do now when there is a disaster. The people of Rapid City and the surrounding hills took care of our own. A week later, it started to rain. Mayor Barnett called for martial law for people in the South Canyon area to go to higher ground towards Stevens High School. No flood that day. I started hearing stories of some of the tragedies concerning my friends, like the people in Dark Canyon who spent the night balancing their children on a bed mattress, trying to stay alive. They lost their dog. Another friend lost both parents on Jackson Boulevard. The girl I was with that night, the one the dead body hit her, made it home. Both children were safe. My other friend was not so lucky. She lost her 4-year-old daughter in the flood. The babysitter had tried to get all the kids out, but she couldn't save that one. They found her body 4 days later. They lived where the Civic Center is now. I never did get to thank the people who pulled us over to the MDU building by the fairgrounds. If any of you hear this, thank you. You saved my life. I never talked about the flood very much. The sights, the sounds, and smell of destruction and death is something I will remember forever.
A lifelong Rapid City resident, Carol Engel graduated from Stevens High School and will be celebrating her 50th high school reunion this year. Carol started JJ's Savage Tan in Rapid City and also worked for a major airline from 1990 to 2006. The past 10 years, Carol has worked at Bear Country, who also happened to be celebrating 50 years this summer. Her daughter and two grandkids live in Rapid City. Carol was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer in 2019 and is happy to report her cancer went into remission 6 months ago, as of the date of this recording.
The night of the flood, Steve Swanson had ridden his bicycle to work. Because of the heavy rain, his father, Leonard, picked him up. Leonard was Public Works Director for Rapid City at the time and was concerned about Canyon Lake flooding. He headed toward Canyon Lake with his son in the truck, not knowing that his job was about to become much more demanding.
My name is Steve Swanson. I was born and raised in Rapid City. My dad was Leonard F. Swanson. He worked for the city. He was the Public Works Director at the time of the 1972 flood. The night of the flood, I had rode my bicycle up to work because we lived about 6 blocks away. I grew up in the south part of town, which didn't really get hit by the flood too hard. But he come and picked me up because it was raining so hard that evening. And I believe it was around 10:30 that evening of the flood that he stopped and picked me up. And he said, well, I want to run out to Canyon Lake Dam because they were worried that it was going to break. And we got to the intersection of West Main and Mountain View Road. And the water was about a foot and a half deep then in that intersection. And we were Dad's city vehicle. He had a two-way radio. And there was people out at Canyon Lake Dam that were watching it and that worked for the city. And they called Dad on the two-way radio right when we were at that intersection at Bacon Park and said the dam had just broke. And Dad said, let's get the heck out of here. So we whipped a UV right there in that intersection. And we went up to, I believe it was Star Village Hill. And we met one of the fire trucks up there that had radios so they could communicate with all the other people in the fire department and the police department and the sheriff's department, kind of a command post they set up there. From there, it was really dark night. You couldn't see very well, but you could see where the floodwaters, it was knocking over transformers. They were kind of sparking and you could see sparks and stuff coming off the power lines. They started getting phone calls then of people that were drowning. And that's about when Dad told me I was 15. So he said, I better take you home and get back out here. And so Dad took me home. Then we didn't see Dad, I bet you, for about 3 days after that. He was doing whatever he could, you know, identifying people that had drowned. And then, of course, the floodwaters were taking out all the utilities like gas lines. They had to shut off the gas and power and water mains. And that's what I remember that night anyway. But then afterwards, like we talked a little bit earlier about getting shots down here, downtown Rapid. I think we were getting typhoid shots and tetanus shots. And I'm not sure, and they were handing out water. I think the National Guard was here with big trucks with potable water because our water wasn't safe to drink at that point. They said if you boiled it, we didn't have hot water because we didn't have electricity or gas. So if you wanted a shower, some people did have water in town, but you had to take a cold shower or you had to boil your water on top of the stove if you wanted to use it, I suppose, for cooking and stuff. And that's the most I can remember of that evening. And then afterwards, there just was a lot of cleanup. And I went over to a guy on the west side of town. We helped him clean his house out. He had about 2 or 3 feet of mud. There was a basement window, and the owner went and rented a 2-inch pump, and he stuck the hose down through the window into the basement. And the mud was really kind of soupy, but not quite soupy enough. So then we ran a garden hose down the window too. And then we just made our own little soupy mixture there and sucked it out of the basement. And we just kind of kept pushing all the mud over to that spot or by pails and hauling it over there. That's how we cleaned all the mud out of his basement.
You had mentioned something I wasn't aware of, but there was a caretaker at Canyon Lake.
And the Mayor Barnett has a good story about that too. There was a little log cabin right below the dam, and it was he kind of took care of the park and the area, but his whole family lived there. Dad was at Canyon Lake earlier that evening with Mayor Barnett, and they had stopped there and told the caretaker and his family. They were sitting down eating dinner. Dad and the mayor says, you guys better leave right away. And then the mayor and dad turned around and started driving away, and they didn't see him coming out of the house. So they went back, and then they got a little more like, leave now. I talked to Mayor Barnett here. He had a deal at the Journey Museum here a couple months ago, and he says, it's a good thing, Dad. And they went back because they were going to, I think, finish their dinner or something, but they got out right away. And I don't know how much longer after that the dam broke, but it wiped that cabin out. That cabin was completely gone, but the family was safe.
Now, you had mentioned you hadn't seen your dad. I mean, he worked pretty tirelessly for several days after the flood. How long did his job remain very challenging after the flood?
Quite a while. Dad's position when the flood happened was public works director. And then shortly after that, they named him urban renewal director. And that was hard on him because he had to go to all these people that lived in the floodplain and tell them they can no longer live in the floodplain. They want to make it the greenway. So if we had another flood, it would run right through and it wouldn't hopefully kill anybody or drown anybody. And so that was hard on him. I heard stories. I never seen him, but I guess he teared up a few times when he was telling people that, you know, they couldn't rebuild in the floodplain. I think there was only a couple structures that they didn't move that's in the floodplain, like the mill down here on 5th and Omaha. That was so big they couldn't move that. I think there was one or two other things I think they didn't move that are in the floodplain. But that went on for quite a while. Then he traveled around the country a little bit. He went to a few cities that they wanted to do floodplains. It was ongoing for quite a while, and Dad was pretty staunch about not ever building in the floodplain again. I know they had a meeting right away with FEMA right after the flood. FEMA came in, and Dad and the mayor and I think the city council, they had a big meeting, and FEMA said, well, we'll bring in trailer houses and we'll set them back up in the floodway. And Dad said, absolutely not. We're not putting any more people out in that suicidal floodplain. He didn't want anybody sleeping out in that floodplain again. And that's kind of how it got started, I think.
The flood, as traumatic as it was, did it kind of pull the community closer together?
I think it did, yeah. Oh, I know it did, because they talk about that. I've heard, I think, like Mayor Barnett talk about that, how it kind of pulled the community together and everybody pitched in to help and do things and get the city back up and running. And I know the mayor praises I think his name is Don Wessel. He ran the water treatment plant, and they had to send in parts from outside the state to fix the water treatment plant. But he praises him a lot too for getting it up and running again and getting safe water back out to the public. Yeah, a lot of people pitched in. Jerry Schroener too, who was on the city council, and Dee Dee Gear was helping out a lot. There's a bunch of names, you know, I probably can't name them all, but there's quite a few people that helped. And I think pretty much everybody in Rapid probably helped if they could. I just hope they keep the greenway and the floodway. They don't build too much stuff on it, or especially as far as people sleeping. But I saw some pretty good floodwaters that, you know, since then, in this last 50 years. And you can watch the water run through the parks and the greenway, and it flows pretty good. And that's basically, they said, what caused a lot of the flooding was debris was getting under the bridges and damming it up under the bridges, and then it started going out around it. And that's what caused a lot of the damage, too, was all the debris getting caught underneath the bridges. Hopefully Rapid City doesn't see anything like that ever again.
I'm just curious, is your dad still living? Or?
No, Dad passed away. He was 85, but he sure liked the greenway. It made him smile. Him and Mom would walk it a lot, the bike path. He sure was proud of it. He was proud of the greenway and all the parks and the golf courses and stuff like that. And he sure liked it.
Steve Swanson retired 5 years ago at the age of 60 after working at Hills Materials for 36 years. He spends his time on fishing, hunting, gardening, and photography.
Lyndall and Sally Nelson were a young couple just getting started in the summer of 72. Lyndall worked as a driver for Metz Baking, so the couple usually went to bed early. But when Sally awoke to the sound of a semi-truck's air horn blasting in their trailer court, she knew something wasn't right.
Lyndall Nelson.
Sally Nelson, his wife.
We live west of Hermosa. Address is Hermosa. We've lived at our new location for 1 year. We had grown up here. I'd grown up on a farm about 120 miles away. The wife grew up in Pierre. We left after college, a job in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Worked there for about 45 years. And then we just came back and built here. We bought property here in 2001 with the anticipation of retiring out here, and here we are.
We first met when we were in college. We attended NCB, National College Business, over here in Kansas City. We ended up at a trailer park on Campbell and behind Taco John's, no longer there. And we did go through the flood.
Our farm is 7 miles west of Martin, and we had a divorced couple down home that had divorced and had the trailer sitting for 2 years, and they'd let water pipes freeze up and all that stuff. It was a 12 by 60 trailer, and pulled it out to the farm, and I tore all the floors out and put in new pipes and redid floors and some other things, and otherwise it was in fair shape. Took one of Dad's old tractors on the farm and wired electric brakes and pulled it all the way to Rapid, 120 miles. Come in on Campbell in Omaha. As I recall, Campbell was a two-lane street then, north-south, and turned left on that right at rush hour, went down to St. Pat, turned east on St. Pat for a block, turned in to go past the thrift center on the backside into the trailer court, set it up, locked it, started working on skirting, but I hadn't just barely started, and then the flood hit.
Lyndall had a summer job working for Old Home, Metz Baking Company, I guess it was called,
and that
was on St. Joe. He was delivering bread to the tourist places up the hill, so we went to bed quite early, maybe even before 9 o'clock, because he got up in the wee hours of the morning. He had to get to the bakery and load his truck and stuff, so we didn't hear any of the warnings or anything like this. We were still busy unpacking, hadn't met many of the neighbors, because we were only in there for the second month, paid our second month rent, and so we'd gone to bed early, and I happened to wake up, and I could hear this semi blowing this horn. I remember it as a fog horn. He says it was an air horn. I just thought
semi-air
it was
horn.
Out of place. Got up and looked out the window, and the neighbor's trailer, the light was on, and they were screaming, "The dam broke, get out." And when you wake up and you don't know what's going on, I have no idea what time it was. I could look out. We had a rear bedroom. I looked out, and there was a white fence, and the water was coming over the fence, but the light was still on. There was a night light there, an outside light. So we got dressed, had mind to put on tie shoes, pants, jackets. The trailer, it was total, but the water in the bedroom was clear to the ceiling, and it was a front kitchen. The kitchen didn't get too wet, but it just broke the frame, and it floated for quite some time and caught on trees. But as we exited, there were steps, and we went down. The water was ice cold, stunk. You could smell gas and sewer. Even though I had jeans on, I could feel some chemicals, or I had little tiny burns on my legs. But this semi had been driving down the road. He saw us. He was starting to back up with his lights because the water was getting very deep. It was chest high on me. I used to have a jacket with that fleece lining, and I kept it for a number of years because it had the water line on that white fleece lining. Since gotten rid of it. But so we climbed in the back of it, and as I remember, as he was backing up slowly, there was a fence at the end of our trailer park. I remember us being about the third or fourth trailer in from the end. I didn't realize the creek was that close. There was this ugly green fence. The fence was gone, but as he was backing up, our trailer was still there, but there was a two-story house, a white one, that I remember floating by. Eventually, he backed all the way out, and we got out and went over the laundromat, and the owner opened the laundromat and provided us with beverages, water, and stuff like this. We sat there for hours. I think we were maybe some of the last ones out of our park. I know there were several people that died. I was told that there was a military family immediately across from us, and we didn't know them, we just saw them. It was a gentleman in the Air Force out at the base with a wife and a baby. She dropped the baby, she went after the baby, he went after both, and I think all three of them passed. I don't know of anybody else in the lot. Like I said, we hadn't been there very long. And it was ironic because there was another trailer park right on the other side of Campbell, right on the creek by the fairgrounds. Really wanted that trailer park because they were right on the creek. That lot was $5 more. And we thought, you know, if we take that other lot that was $5 cheaper, we could have a telephone. Morning after that, it was just kind of, I don't have too many memories. We walked to a friend of my husband, has a brother who lived out in Rapid Valley at the time. He did call him and let him know right away. And so his brother was able to call his parents down on the farm. My parents lived in Pier, and they didn't know if we were dead or alive for about 48 hours because then the phones went down. Myron, his brother, must have said something to him about, well, go to my friends over on such and such house. It was a few blocks away. So we went there and got dry clothes. And like I said, those next few days were, I just can't remember too much about them. We lost the trailer, obviously, most everything in it. Some things were washable. His car, a 67 Camaro, and a motorcycle. So we didn't have a car for several days till his dad came up from the farm with equipment to salvage what we could. One memory I do have, Haggerty's over in
Bacon Park.
Bacon Park, thank you. I remember seeing bobcats going in and out because they were scooping up mud.
So all the glass doors and
glass
all that stuff was all knocked out.
Garbage, yeah.
We stayed at my brother's friend's for three, 4 days. And then we got a place from some good friends.
Well, I think it was HUD that set us up.
Yeah.
They found an apartment, or these people, wonderful people. They've since moved out of Rapid City. Slattons were their name. They live 3 miles north of Rapid City, which is probably right in town now. But back then, it was out in the country.
North on Haines. He was a manager of Black Hills Pack trucking area. And we stayed there till I was out of college. And then got a job about a month before I graduated in Minneapolis.
So then we moved to Minnesota and had been there till we both retired and moved back. I don't remember seeing it, but he went down there because his car was there. He'll tell you about his car, but unfortunately there was quite a few bodies found in that area because not only a bunch of trailers, not only from our park, but other parks, cars hung up there.
Our trailer, I had insurance on it. I wanted insurance before I pulled down the highway, so anyway, I got insurance on it. And then a month later, and the flood hit after we had it set up here, I got things all settled a few weeks later and went to the bank and had the insurance check, and they were real quick about getting things done. And I remember I had $14 left over after I paid the bill.
We consider ourselves extremely lucky that we lived through the flood, and we had insurance to cover most things, but still it was a traumatic experience.
The Nelsons' neighbors in Flamingo Mobile Home Estates were James and Laura Robinson. They had three daughters, Arlie, born in 1963, Lena, born in 1965, and Tina, born in 1970. James was a civilian employee at Ellsworth Air Force Base, and Laura worked at Carroll Cleaners. Laura was 33 the night she died, and is buried in Black Hills National Cemetery. Tina, who was only a year and a half old, was not found. She has a memorial stone in Kentucky, where her father was originally from. James, Arlie, and Lena Robinson survived the flood. Despite the harrowing events of the flood of 72, Lyndall and Sally Nelson always maintained a love of South Dakota and the nearby Black Hills. Lyndall shared fond memories of visiting the area on vacation with his family after harvest and before planting. After retirement, the couple returned to the area and now live west of Hermosa, though both admit they were careful not to build too close to any lakes or streams. Despite the common themes and some shared experiences among the survivors, each story stands on its own because each offers a perspective as unique as the individual sharing it. We thank this episode's guests for sharing their memories and observations regarding the events of the night of June 9, 1972, and its lingering aftermath. If you or someone you know has a personal account of their experiences during the flood of 72, we would like to hear your story. Contact the Rapid City Public Library at 605-394-6139 or email ask@rcplib.org.